5 months later, lying on a rug spread on the floor of her cell at Gedda, while Nazira attended her and the mullahs waited at the door, Rebecca gave birth to her first child. As soon as she felt the slippery burden she had carried for so long rush out of her, she struggled up on her elbows. Nazira held the infant in her arms, all shiny with blood and mucus, still bound to Rebecca by the thick cord. "What is it?" Rebecca gasped. Is it a boy? Sweet God, let it be a boy!" Nazira cackled like a broody hen and presented the child for her inspection. "This one is a little stallion." With her forefinger, she tickled the baby's tiny penis. "See how hard he stands already. You could crack an egg on the end of it. Beware anyone in skirts who stands in this one's way." The mullahs of Gedda sent word to Omdurman, and within days 20 Agajis, headed by Al-Nur, came to escort them back to the holy city. When they reached the gates of Osman Atalan's palace, he was waiting to meet them. During the past 5 months, his fury had had time to abate. However, he was trying not to appear too benign, and stood with one hand on the hilt of his sword, scowling hideously. Al-Nur dismounted and took the child from Rebecca's arms. He was wrapped in cotton swaddling clothes, and his face was covered to protect him from the sunlight and the dust. "Mighty Atalan, behold your son!" Osman glared at Al-Nur. "This I must see for myself." He took the bundle and placed it in the crook of his left arm. With his right hand he unwrapped it. He stared at the tiny creature. His head was bald, except for a single copper-tinted quiff. His skin was the colour of goat's milk, with a splash of coffee added to it. His eyes were the colour of the waters of the Bahr al-Azrek, the Blue Nile. Osman opened the lower folds of his covering, and his skull slipped, hovered on the verge of a smile. The infant felt the cool river breeze fan his genitals and let fly a yellow stream that splashed down his father's brightly patched jibba. Osman let forth a startled roar of laughter. "Behold, this is my son. As he pisses on me, so he shall piss on my enemies." He held the child high and he said, "This is my son, Ahmed Habib Abd Atalan. Approach and show him respect." One after another, his agajis came forward and with a full salam greeted Ahmed, who kicked and gurgled with amusement. Osman had not glanced in the direction of the two waiting women, but now he handed the infant to Al-Nur and said offhandedly, "Give the child to his mother, and tell her that she will return to her quarters in the harem, and there await my pleasure." Over the following 18 months, Rebecca saw Osman only 3 or 4 times, and then at a distance, as he came and went on affairs of war and state. Whenever he returned, he would send Al-Nur to fetch Ahmed, and would keep the child away for hours on end until it was time for him to feed. The child flourished. Rebecca fancied that she saw in him a resemblance to her own father and to Amber, which made her loneliness more acute. She had only Nazira and the baby. The other women of the harem were silly, scatterbrained creatures. She missed her sisters and thought of them when she awoke to another empty day and when she composed herself to sleep with Ahmed at her bosom. Then, slowly, she became aware that she wanted Osman Atalan to send for her. Her body had recovered from the damage of childbirth, except for the stretch marks across her belly and the soft sag of her breasts. Sometimes when she awoke in the night and could not sleep again, she thought of the men she had known, but her mind returned variably to Osman. She needed somebody to talk to, somebody to be with, somebody to make love to her, and nobody had done that with the same skill as Osman Atalan. Then the rumour in the harem was that there was to be a great new jihad, a war against the Christian infidels of Abyssinia. Osman Atalan would lead the army, and Allah would go with him. Ahmed was now toddling and talking. She hoped that Osman would take them with him. She remembered how it had been at Galabat, when she had conceived. She thought about that a great deal. She had vivid dreams about it, of how he had looked and how he had felt inside her. Her loneliness was an ache deep within her. She devoted herself entirely to the child, but the nights were long. Then the news ran through the harem. Osman was taking 3 wives and 8 concubines with him to the jihad. Rebecca was chosen as one of the 8. Ahmed and Nazira would go with her, but none of Osman's other children. She understood that he was interested solely in the child, and that she and Nazira were merely Ahmed's nursemaids. Her empty body ached. They rode to the Abyssinian border 40,000 strong, a mighty warlike array. Osman left Rebecca and his other women at Galabat. He rushed into Abyssinia and struck with all his cavalry at the passes. The Abyssinians were also a warlike nation, and warriors to the blood. Although they had been alerted by Rider Courtney's warning, even they could not stand before the ferocity of Osman Atalan's attack. He drove hard for the mountain passes at Minkti and Atbara, and seized them against desperate and courageous resistance. He slaughtered all the Abyssinian prisoners that he took, and led his army into the Minkti Pass. They toiled up through bitter cold. Ras Adal, the Abyssinian general, had not expected them to come so high, and he made the mistake of allowing them to debouch unopposed onto the plain of Debrasin before he attacked them. The battle was fierce and bloody, but at last Ras Adal broke before the savagery of Osman's assault. He and all his army were driven into the river at their backs, and most of them drowned. The entire province of Amhara fell to Osman, and he was able to advance unopposed to capture Gondar, the ancient capital of Abyssinia. Gondar was the city in which Osman intended to set up his own capital, but he had never experienced a winter in the Abyssinian highlands. His Beja were men of the sands and deserts. They shivered, sickened, and died. Osman abandoned his conquests, sacked and burned Gondar, and led his men back to Galabat. He arrived on a litter drawn by his own warhorse, Al-Buk. The cold of the mountains had entered his lungs, and he was a sick man. They laid him on his Angareb and waited for him to die. Osman wheezed for breath. He choked and hawked and spat up slugs of greenish-yellow phlegm.
"Send for Al-Yamal," he ordered.
Rebecca came to his bedside and nursed him. She dosed him with a brew of selected herbs and roots that Nazira prepared, and sweated him with hot stones. When his crisis came, she brought Ahmed to him. "You cannot die, mighty Atalan. Your son needs his father." It took several weeks, but at last Osman was on the road to recovery. During his convalescence, he sent for Rebecca on most evenings and resumed the long conversations with her as though they had never ceased. Rebecca was lonely no more. As he grew stronger, he made love to her again, possessing her masterfully and completely, filling the aching emptiness deep inside her. He declared Ahmed his heir, and in the unpredictable fashion in which he often did things, sent for a mullah and made Rebecca his wife. It was only when she lay beside him on the first night as his wife that she could bring herself to face the truth squarely. He had made her his slave in body and in heart. He had snuffed out the last spark of her once indomitable spirit. The suffering he inflicted upon her so casually had become a drug that she could not live without. In a bizarre and unnatural way, he had forced her to love him. She knew she could never be without him now.